Hello and welcome to Radio SGN, the number one gay news podcast in Seattle. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. Thank you for choosing our podcast for your listening enjoyment this week. I am one of the hosts of this podcast. My name is Lindsay. I'm a staff writer with the SGN, and I do all kinds of things. Joining me is my co-host,
Benny Loy.
My pronouns are she, her.
And I'm she, they.
Yeah, we've got a lot of big things happening with the SGN. One thing that is happening is we are switching to bi-weekly print publication. So you'll have 2 weeks to grab a copy of our latest issue, which gives you a little bit more time to get out there and find it at some of our amazing distribution locations. But with that change being made, the podcast is still going to be coming to you weekly. So that just means you're going to get 2 episodes centering around some of the great stories that many of our talented writers have contributed to in this latest issue. I guess we'll just get into it. The first story that we're going to talk about this week from this issue is a story that I wrote. I actually went to Seattle's Haunted Soiree. It's called the House of Spirits. It's a macabre cocktail party located in Capitol Hill. And I can easily say it may have traumatized me. It's a party. It's a fancy party.
Yeah.
It was super cool. So I got to go with my partner. We got comped tickets because I was reviewing it. The first thing was we got to do like adult trick-or-treating, which we will be talking about trick-or-treating later. But when you were a kid, did you remember those houses where like someone would be dressed up in a costume and they'd like stand really still and the candy would be on their lap or something and you'd think they were a decoration and they would pop out and scare you?
Mm-hmm.
I hated that. But at the same time, I'm a hypocrite because I did do that a couple of times when I was like 8. I would get home trick-or-treating, dressed in all black and put on a monster mask. And I thought it was really funny to scare the older kids. But it's not funny when a full grown-ass man is doing this. And I am a scared little child. Even now, I'm a 24-year-old scared little child. They did adult trick-or-treating where a guy in a costume was holding a bowl of candy and you had to go get your fancy candy because it's fancy adult candy. Not edibles, but just it's like important or something. It like jumps out and scares you. It was all in good fun, but definitely really scary. And then you kind of enter into this house, which a fun fact about the House of Spirits, they have locations all over the country. So Seattle's not the only place. If you're tuning in from out of Seattle, check out House of Spirits, see if you've got one in your area. But they're always located in actual haunted locations. I didn't even know that we were in a haunted house. I was doing research for the article after I was there. And I was like, that's even scarier. And I'm glad I didn't know going into it because, like I said, I scare really easy. There's all kinds of actors just basically doing improv in like these very detailed costumes. And every year there's a different story with kind of a mystery that you have to solve as a guest. And this mystery was freaky, I thought. It's Dr. Volkav's asylum. So the story is that the location we're in was an asylum for people that were being like plagued by spirits of these weird creatures. And then one night, everybody in the house just died. And it gets into some very weird details, like Dr. Volkov and his wife, who's also a doctor, were having some marital issues and his wife died in childbirth the night that everybody died. And if you're trying to solve the mystery and be like, what happened? And you talk to these people, there's a lot of really great performances. There was a pole dancer. There's a really cool magician, some singers. You get 5 free drinks, well, drinks attached with your ticket. And you get to go through like a little haunted house exhibit, which again, freaked me out because they split me and my partner up to go through the haunted house. So I had to do it alone. And I didn't like that. But by far the creepiest thing, and if you're listening to the podcast, you might be hearing a little bit more about this than I was allowed to write about because our editor said that I was giving too much away in my first draft. But they have these rituals that are beautiful, but creepy as fuck. There is one where Dr. Volkov himself is like mutilated and killed multiple times on stage. I saw a lot of this man that I did not want to see. Traumatizing.
Wow.
So yeah, but it was super fun. I would highly recommend it. I didn't solve the mystery and I have so many questions. So also if anybody solves this mystery, please explain it to me. I couldn't even find answers on the dark web. So for anybody that's looking for that feeling you had as a kid around Halloween, you know, when things were actually scary and interactive, like this will give you that. It did for me at least. It's really good. Yeah.
I'm going to have to check it out. It sounds awesome.
You should. It was so cool. I loved it. I also, though, really like things that are kind of cheesy, like dinner theater. And my partner's not so much into interactive theater, but they enjoyed it, too.
I once did a murder mystery dinner thing
That sounds so cool. I've always wanted to do that.
It was very low budget. I was just the tidiest bit disappointed. I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah, no, that sounds awesome. It sounds like they're not like super low budget, that they're actually putting in a lot of effort.
Oh yeah, so much effort. And I guess speaking of gay things, some international news to share with us that's pretty recent.
Greece's first openly gay political party leader says he was deliberately trying to stir stagnant waters and tackle the taboo subject of same-sex couples having children when he announced he and his partner planned to become parents through surrogacy. That might be a win. Weeks after his unexpected election to the helm of the main opposition left wing, he insisted that his comments had aimed to give the issue visibility in a nation where LGBT rights were rarely publicly discussed. Love makes the family. There are issues solved in other countries, but not in Greece. That's why I entered politics, to stir stagnant waters, to awaken consciences, not to caress them in their sleep. So I think that's a pretty big win.
That's also really ballsy to do as a figure.
A gay political figure coming out, stirring a little bit of controversy in his area, that like, hey, I'm going to be a parent and there's nothing wrong with that. And also, you can't stop me.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said, where is this again?
In Greece.
Greece, yeah. So pretty close to Italy, right?
I am also someone who received like an F in geography. So
we have confirmation from our expert, Lauren, that Greece is near Italy. And I think that's really fascinating because Italy has fallen under conservative leadership recently and moving to like take lesbians off of the birth certificate of their children. So like when two women have a kid, only the one that births the child now gets their name on the birth certificate, even if they did it through surrogacy, you know, where like logically the other parents.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really interesting. And there's been cases like that where it's happened in the U.S. when both parents don't get their names on the birth certificate. If they split up, parent that doesn't have their name on the birth certificate doesn't get custody of the child, which...
Yeah, that's messed up.
Yeah. But it's good to see that their neighbors. I don't know what direction Greece is the neighbor to, because we're not that good, but hopefully moving towards a more progressive stance on queer parenthood, which is something we'd love to see more countries in Europe do, especially countries over kind of in the Mediterranean where things are a little less progressive and a little more Catholic.
Other than that, you want to talk about Halloween stuff?
Yeah, I would love to talk about Halloween stuff. Do you have a costume in mind? Are you doing a couple's costume with Lauren?
I don't know yet. Lauren shared with me a picture of a couple's costume idea that I don't want to do.
What is it?
It's horrifying, and not in the way that you think. She wanted us to both dress up as bloody tampons. I'm sorry that I'm a prude. Like, but like, I'm not dressing up like
that.
You
guys are so funny. I love you just like sputtering out, trying to pawn on the air, and the Lord in the back.
I just didn't want to
say tampons.
I didn't want to say like the bloody part because I don't want to put images in people's minds.
That's very thoughtful of you. Yeah. But I like it. Do you want to hear a joke, actually, that one of my friends told me in seventh grade?
Sure, sure.
It ties in. What does a vampire and a tampon have in common? They're both white and suck up blood. And all the girls want them inside.
That's a pretty good one. Oh, man. Speaking of, are you totally against ever having kids? What's the plan?
Oh, my gosh. Why have I had this conversation so many times in the last week?
Every single time, yeah. Like, it always happens, too, when someone, like, straight realizes or, you know, figures out that I'm gay and with a woman, they always end up asking me that about like, well, are you guys gonna like what?
What are we gonna do?
It's certainly not gonna be by accident.
I feel like I've always been personally very anti-birth, but also like my parents are divorced and like I've just never wanted to get divorced. Mm-hmm. So the best worst is not get married. But yeah, no, I think especially if I were to get married, I would not want to have children because I just feel like that puts a lot of stress financially, emotionally. There's the whole thing where we talked about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Scientists are predicting the fall of modern civilization will happen somewhere around 2050, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
Also makes you have to think that like any child born in this year, 2023, will be about our age, my age at least, in 2050, right? They'll be like in their early 20s. I don't want to bring someone to the world that's going to have to endure that But especially not somebody that's going to have to go through that as a young person. That's horrible. You wouldn't, like, even get to have your life.
Wait, what kind of collapse is this you're talking about? Climate or population?
Well, they said civilization collapse. So I think it would be caused by climate change, as well as we're just seeing, like, so many governments. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to fearmonger, too.
Plague, famine, war.
Yes, plague, famine. If we see climate disasters really strike on coastal areas that are the most populated, people are going to be trying to move inward. That's going to cause a huge economic collapse within the U.S. If, like, everyone in Seattle, Florida, California, like, you know, is trying to move to the middle of the country, that would be nuts. When I was starting college, I had to fill out an application that was like, do you have a family history of, you know, checked off and every single box.
Whoa.
So I was, mom, you should not have reproduced. This is messed up. Like, nobody deserves these genetics. So yeah, so those are my many, many reasons why I don't want to have children. That being said, though, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to, like, maybe adoption when I'm really financially stable. But then also, as a white person, you know, I don't want to be a white savior. And, like, who's to say that I would be giving anybody a better situation than what they're in currently? Because I don't think I'd be a very good parent. That's just me. I like my dogs. You can't put a kid in a kettle and leave.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you could certainly try for a time until you get caught.
Until you get caught? Well, gosh, that's like that vlogger woman.
That lady. Yeah.
What's her name?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, she's like a Mormon.
They just had a Dateline episode about her.
Jeez. Yeah, I need to watch some of that because that stuff is juicy. Terrible. It's terrible, but it's also juicy.
It is so juicy. I like fell down an internet rabbit. Does this happen? Like, if I see something horrible happen to somebody else, I like, oh, Ruby Frankie, that's her name. When I read about something like Ruby Frankie's kids escaping and getting the police involved, I know way too much about this case because I spent hours on TikTok and I was like, I didn't know them before this.
I didn't know them before this either, but I've listened to the 911 call. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's so sad.
Like, it's awful. Oh my God. Yeah. Everybody saw something was going on. If anybody who watched,
and nobody did anything.
Yeah, anybody who watched her videos, there was so much evidence, like, but because she was in the Mormon church and they often, like, protect, you know, not to say all, but they often protect their own. Nothing was done about it until it got to that point.
It is so messed up, too.
Also, end family vloggers.
Yes, fuck family vloggers. I hate that. Like, I hate that someone, they're just exploiting their kids.
Yeah, it's like, we already live in a dystopia, right? Like, I already know that I'm being watched 24/7 with, like, my cell phone and marketing companies.
I think you're being listened to
right now.
Oh,
absolutely, yeah. Multiple sources. I'm sure that my dogs are selling my data, personal data, to advertising agencies. But you're forcing these kids to be under constant observation and judgment of strangers. And, you know, and they're growing up to, like, not have any time for themselves where they can be alone. And you're also turning it into, like, a full-time job where now they feel like they have to perform to provide for the family. It is so messed up.
It monetizes parental love as well.
Yes.
I need to, my mom won't like me if I don't make content. Like,
did you ever see that viral video of that mommy vlogger who was filming her son finding out that their dog died?
And then she made him recorded, like, an outro or something, and she was like, don't look that sad. Change your face.
Oh, no. She told him to cry more, that it wasn't convincing enough. And she forgot to, like, clip that out. And it's just horrifying.
It's like, if that's what she didn't clip out, what kinds of things does she remember to clip out of her other videos?
Yeah, yeah. We need to, like, really do something about minors going into, because this is such a new thing, like the influencer, you know, economy and everything like that. We need to do something about minors, you know, doing this stuff. Because this is child labor. This is not okay. Like, if somebody can make being a YouTuber their full-time job, can make being a streamer their full-time job, we need to have specific laws regarding the age that you can go ahead and do that, you know, because no six-year-old should be an influencer. I'm sorry. Like, no.
This conversation took a
big turn. It did take a big turn. Sorry. You know, I'm very passionate about this.
Six-year-old influencers is way scarier than anything I've ever encountered in Halloween. So
yeah,
like, it just kept going spookier.
It's very scary. Also, six-year-old influencers have terrible, terrible political opinions. We should not be listening
they
to them.
They do. Cancel all of
cancel
them.
Cancel all of them.
Hashtag cancel the kids. This has been a really great conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll definitely continue by talking more about Halloween and whether or not we should cancel certain people. Rumor has it, Cameron might be on the show later mm-hmm. with more amicable updates. So please stick around for that. But before we get to Cameron and Am I the Asshole, we've got some great advertisements for you to listen to. And then we have a wonderful interview, which may or may not be spooky. Depends on who it is. Please stick around and we will be back after this break.
Radio SDN is sponsored by Seattle Shakespeare Company, now presenting a new queer adaptation of The Merry Wives of Windsor. Falstaff is back with a ploy to shake up the town, but Mistress Page and Mistress Ford flirt their way out of his plot with humor and ingenuity. This farcical comedy runs through November 19th. For more info, check out seattleshakespeare.org.
Thank you so much for sticking around. Now joining me today is a super amazing guest. We have with us hitmaker, songwriter, producer, and now author Desmond Child. Desmond, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I want to know more about this program. I'm just so happy to be on it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for being on it. So this is our weekly podcast for the Seattle Gay News, where we interview important members of the LGBTQ community, members of the Seattle community, and we just discuss what's going on in the news with the LGBTQ community. So it's super fun. It's a super cool podcast. And again, we are so thrilled to have you here. Really quick, before we get into things, I would also like to note that Desmond Child is super talented, is coming out with a new book, Living on a Prayer, and also celebrating the 10-year anniversary of his documentary, Two, The Story of Roman and Nero. This documentary will be screening at Amdocs. And Desmond Child has his own skincare line because he is such a celebrity. So if you're interested, please check out skincare line called Vita Loca. It is skincare that has no gender for the LGBTQ community, for anybody, whether you are a he, a she, a they, or of course, all of us. So again, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much. My book is called Living on a Prayer, Big Songs, Big Life. And it just came out. It's been a 7-year journey. I call it more like a 7-year jailhouse confession because it was, you know, the more I got into it, the deeper it got. I've had a very, you know, amazing, like very vibrant life and a lot of ups and downs. And I think that people will enjoy reading about all the stories with all the celebrities and, you know, that I collaborated with and the stories behind the scenes. But as it's going along, it's also the story of coming into myself, realizing that I was more bi than I was gay, and finally meeting the love of my life, my husband, Curtis. We've been together 33 years, and somewhere in the middle of it all, we had children through surrogacy. That's an amazing part of the journey as well. We made a documentary called Two, The Story of Roman and Nero, and this year is the 10th anniversary of its release. And yes, we had this amazing screening at Amdocs in Palm Springs. It's been like a marvelous journey. Our sons are now 21 and they're in college at NYU. And, you know, it's like they turned out great. So I think that our family is exemplary and people should get to know us because I think it gives a lot of people hope that they too can have families, and especially the grandparents who are always scared they won't have grandchildren. And we showed them that, yes, you can. And you can have your own biological children because although we're gay, that doesn't mean we're infertile, right? So I had a very intense childhood. My mother was Cuban. We lived in the exile Cuban community in the projects of Miami called Liberty City. It was poverty. We were Latino. And then I realized that I was, you know, nonconforming sexually. And I had to overcome all of those obstacles because this is the 50s, the 60s. I mean, even though there was peace and love and flowers in your hair, it wasn't that free and it wasn't that much love, you know, growing up in the South. I think it's pretty extraordinary that in spite of all of those setbacks, that I made it to as far as I have.
That is so amazing. So you write a little bit about those experiences in your new book. And I was wondering, what kind of practices did you do to jog your memory about some of those early experiences in your life? Did you have conversations with family? What kind of helped you there?
I had an incredible co-writer. His name is David Ritz, and he's written some of the most astounding biographies. He's ghosted biographies. He wrote the book Respect that they made the movie about Aretha Franklin. And that's how I got to know about him, because I read a review in the New York Times about the book. And I said, okay, this is the guy. And so I went to see him. You know, he asked me two questions. By the end of the second question, I was already in tears.
Oh, man. Do you remember what those questions were?
Maybe the first one was like, why are you here? And the second one was, what was your relationship with your mother? As soon as he said that and I tried to speak, I couldn't even talk. I was like, he hit the button. I had a very, you know, amazing mother. I compare her to Blanche DuBois in Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire, and also Angelica Houston in The Grifters, because, I mean, she operated, you know, I don't know how many businesses out of the trunk of her car. She had a business card with aliases, you know, in every derived form of her name. Helen, Elena, Elaine, and she was just trying to make ends meet. She was a single mom in Florida, and she didn't have mastery of the English language. And she was extraordinarily beautiful, though. And so she was very domineering and also a very abandoning at the same time, you know. And so I grew up what they call a latchkey child. You know, I'd have to let myself in. Then, you know, she worked all kinds of jobs. She even worked at Burger King. And so at night, at 11 o'clock at night, she'd show up with bags full of leftover Whoppers and fish sandwiches where the bottoms were all soggy and mushy. So we'd take two tops and put them together, and there you have it. That was dinner. And so I don't know if you've seen that movie called Moonlight.
Yeah, yeah.
Those were the projects that I grew up in. In the movie, they film inside one of those, and it was like, oh my God, I'm back. And it was exactly like how I lived. You know, the staircase over here, the bathroom over there. It was so claustrophobic, really, and hot, because in those days there was barely air conditioning, and this is Florida, you know.
Yeah.
And so the thing is that I had to, you know, kind of warn everybody that I had to make sure that this didn't turn into her autobiography instead of mine. But she does, in the end, get the last word. Her epic poem, it's called My Cardboard Boxes, ends the book. And it's just truly astounding. What a great poet she was. And I really realized all this after she had passed 11 years ago. And she was a Latin songwriter and all of that. And so in her honor and her memory, I helped to co-found the Latin Songwriters Hall of Fame. Now in our 11th year, we have a show called La Musa Awards, where we induct the honorees into the Latin Songwriters Hall of Fame. And it's all, you know, a statue of her playing guitar that was done in, you know, around the time when I was born, has become the trophy that we give. It's a beautiful award. So the thing is that, you know, in those days, I didn't know what I was. I just thought, okay, well, I'm a rock star. Rock stars can do whatever they want. They can sleep with girls, boys, whatever. I mean, you know, David Bowie, Mick Jagger, you know, I imagined myself something like that. So I didn't want to have the label on me that I was gay. You know, I was androgynous. But, you know, it took growing up. And really, it wasn't till after I was about 22, 23, and I was living with Maria Vidal off in a tiny little apartment, and we had our group Desmond Child and Rouge. It wasn't till I met somebody and it kind of made me realize that I couldn't continue as Desmond and Maria. But, you know, very wonderful fact is that when I was writing songs, she was working at a diner all day, and her waitress name was Gina. And so when I went to co-write Living on a Prayer with Jon Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora, I threw in, you know, Gina works the diner all day, working for her man. She brings home her pay for love, for love. And it's like, true story. So I was Tommy and she was Gina. Those were very wonderful years But at the same time, you know, like Paul Stanley always jokes, everyone knew that Desmond was gay, except for Desmond. And so I thought I was getting away, like passing as straight, but I guess I wasn't. Maybe it was the eyeliner that was the tip off.
The guyliner. That was all the rage. Yeah,
guyliner. I'm going to stick with that.
I love it. So I did want to know, how did your sexuality and identity impact the work you did creatively?
Well, as soon as I, you know, we had our group together, and because of what happened, I had met a boy that lived diagonally across the street from us. And basically, you know, Maria looked out the window and saw me walking in that direction instead of the other direction, and I got busted. And so I had to come clean, and we were making an album on Capitol Records, and it's called Runners in the Night. And the very first song is called The Truth Comes Out. It had all these lyrics about coming out, and nobody cared. I mean, I guess, you know, we weren't famous enough for anyone to care, but that's when I came out. So as time went on, I realized that there was a glass ceiling, because even though I was writing number one hits with, you know, these hetero rock bands like Bon Jovi and Aerosmith and Kiss, that I wasn't getting the jobs as the producer. Because it's one thing to be, you know, a songwriter with somebody else in a room. Okay, you're equal. But the producer is the boss. So, you know, I think that they didn't want to be dick slapped in the studio into submission. And so it took me a long time to get the respect of rock bands in terms of my being able to produce them. So they threw me solo artists, and mainly women like Ronnie Spector was my first production. Cher, Joan Jett, you know, Alice Cooper. Well, I guess he's not really female, but his name is, but he was a solo artist. And so I did Meatloaf. And then later I met Ricky Martin and I did the music with him. So little by little, bands that had been big in the 80s, they realized that they needed hit songs to be able to continue, even though it was too late. Because once Nirvana hit, the cat was out of the bag, and all of those bands that I worked with weren't getting on VH1 or MTV. It was like from one day to the other, it was nonstop, Smells Like Teen Spirit. So that's when, you know, I had moved with my husband, Curtis, to Miami, Miami Beach, back to my roots. That's where I grew up, and started getting back into Latin music. And then came my discovering Ricky Martin on General Hospital. And he was also in Les Mis on Broadway. And everybody said, you have to work with this guy. You know, he's got it. And he totally did. So I co-wrote and produced with Draco Rosa. And he was his producer. He was also a co-member of Menudo back in the day. And so when I started working with Ricky, he hadn't come out yet. It's like, it was one of those things, you know, people whispered all this. I never saw him with anyone. We never spoke about it. It wasn't until 10 years later that I went to work on an album of his called Mas, M-A-S, and he brought me to his back porch pool area, and we were watching the sun go down, and he said, how do you think I should come out? It was like, oh my God, he's coming out to me, you know, like out loud. I said, Oprah, go on Oprah. She's America's, you know, therapist. So that same day, I got on a plane and I looked at my phone, and he had come out in his Twitter, I think, or on his website or something. And it was like global news. And so when he did make his first appearance, it was on Oprah. And it was like, wow, you know, he was like a completely transformed person, because, you know, it was very hard on him. All the pressure to be, you know, the macho Latin lover and all this kind of stuff. And everyone said, it'll be disappointing to your girl fans if you come out. And we know that that's not true. You know, look at all the gay people that are out now, and women love them more than ever. So it was a false assumption, because the record companies were all headed by these hetero guys that had very kind of old school ideas of what a man was. I was so happy that we made that record. We recorded a song in there called Liar, which is one of my favorite songs, you know, and he says, oh, you know, I got to sit you down and talk to you and let you know about myself. I'm not a perfect person, but you know, and then the chorus comes, but at least I'm not a liar, you know, and it's when that chorus happens, it just explodes. It was kind of his musical way of coming out. I did write a song that was revolutionary for its time called Dude Looks Like a Lady, which I co-wrote with Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. And at that time, it was like, people didn't even know what that meant. And so it has a second verse that says, never judge a book by its cover or who you're going to love by your lover, which, you know, in our view is like, if you like what you see, go for it. If you're feeling it in your heart and accept what you see and accept it into your heart. And so it was funny because there was a worker that came up to me, you know, at our house in Nashville. And he said, you work with that Aerosmith. Yeah. You wrote that song, Do a Naked Lady, right? Because that's what he wanted to hear.
I love that. That is so funny. So I wanted to know too, as someone that has been out publicly queer for a long time and influential in a lot of people's coming out journeys, do you ever hear from fans of yours that you've like helped them come out and accept who they are?
Well, when our documentary to the story of Roman and Nero came out, I mean, through the years, we've gotten so many letters from people saying, you helped me so much because I was in the closet and I realized I didn't have to be. And also to their parents, some people said that they hadn't been out to their parents, so they made them watch the movie first before they came out. And so that's such a good feeling, you know, that we help people to be themselves, whatever that is. I feel that I'm an activist. I mean, we would go to all the pride marches and protested about Proposition 8. We tried to get married. And when we got to San Francisco and we were all dressed in white with a white limousine, our sons were already 3 years old and they were all dressed exactly like us. We went, you know, to get married and they said no. And that was the first day that they turned people away. So Mayor Gavin Newsom called us into his office and he explained what had happened. He told us, and it's in the book, that he had gotten a call from Governor Schwarzenegger, who really was not homophobic and not against gay marriage and all that. The governor said that President George W. Bush had called them and said, hey, knock it off, you know, because if you keep doing this, we're going to have to turn off the faucet. There was like a $2 billion kind of funding that was coming to California and he couldn't risk it. So they both agreed that they would let it go through the courts. And so it finally did so many years later, 10 years later, I guess, they finally gave us gay marriage, which is threatened now. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, the world just seems so upside down. I thought we had made gains. I thought we had gotten accepted. That we, you know, it was law, settled law, and everything is shaky. And that's why I'm very much a part of the human rights campaign and donate to that and really support what they're doing, the ACLU, all of that, you know, doing everything we can do to not lose these rights and also to expand our rights to include, you know, the whole community. It's been crazy, you know, how people are ready to throw democracy out the window when we taught our whole lives that freedom, democracy, let freedom ring, all of that was like the most, you know, important thing about being patriotic. And I can't understand why a third of this country just has turned their back on it. And then it makes me wonder whether they ever really believed in it to begin with and just let us think they did. You know, because there's all of that hatred. We're scape wokes, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of scapegoats, we're scape wokes.
Yeah.
It's like, grow up, get a life, start talking about policy that can, you know, help the people of this country get work and fix the roads, fix the homeless problem, live and help live. How about that? I'm just torn up every day. Like my stomach is in knots every day with what I see that's been going on. And it's really, really scary.
I wanted to ask you, as an activist and a person from Florida, how do you feel about the legislation that's going on there in particular? And have you done anything to help your community that you grew up in?
Well, I'm a big supporter of Deborah Wasserman Schultz and all of the legislation that she's helping. And the thing is, it's that when you have a so-called democracy, you know, people vote and people vote into power the people that represent their feelings and their values. The thing is that they can be also guided towards love instead of hate. And we've seen that that has really been ruling because, like I said, you know, we're escape wokes, you know, like burning books, really? Classics? Because it just didn't sound right to them. I mean, you know, Huckleberry Finn, because he was Tom Sawyer's best buddy. I don't know what they think, but it's an excuse for not really having great policies to help the people. And so we've really slid backwards, I think, in many ways. So if the majority of the people are voting in these leaders, then it represents them. And if there are people that don't agree with it, then they either need to get out or fight hard and resist. And that's where we are now. People saying, is this really where I want to be? Do I really need this fight? You know, we went through the COVID thing. Everybody's still struggling financially. What are people going to do? They've lumped it all into one big thing, reproductive rights. I don't know why the other side is against like fighting global warming, other than the fossil fuel companies are like paying bills or something for their campaigns. But they have to live in this world too. Why live in a world where you're feeling hate all the time? That's not healthy for anybody to be holding that emotion. It's not healthy for their bodies. It's not healthy for their children to grow up in that kind of atmosphere. And it's certainly against what America stands for.
Yeah.
You know, I worked with Barbara Streisand a couple of years ago, and I wrote a song called Lady Liberty for her to sing on her album Walls. And the song is really stunning. I encourage people to go to YouTube and watch the lyric video of Lady Liberty with Barbara Streisand singing it. And by the way, she just put out an album called Evergreens, and it made it onto one of the songs that were the highlights of her career. It's 60 years of singing 22 songs, and I'm song 21, and then Evergreen is song 22. And that song is a tribute to the Statue of Liberty, which I don't know if you've noticed, but we never see her anywhere. Why? She's a woman, and she's inviting immigrants into this country. She has a plaque on the inside of the statue of a poem written by a woman that says, you know, give me your tired and your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, you know, the reckless refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, the tempest tossed, to me. My family came from Cuba. So we were immigrants that came to this country looking for freedom. Why anyone who ever went through that would believe otherwise is something that confounds me, you know, to come to this country and then seek authoritarian leaders. I don't get that. You know, to me, freedom is everything. And America is the shining beacon of light, or should be, in the world. You know, look at the world. How many countries are ruled by one person? If they don't like it, you know, they get detained, put in jail, bullet through their head. There are many countries in Europe also that are still democratic. Thank God that, you know, there are allies. But look east of there, and it's not like that. So, you know, billions of people on this planet are not living in freedom. In the LGBTQ community, like, we have to defend ourselves and protect our, but it's not just us. We have to be part of a larger resistance to this trend towards, you know, authoritarianism. In our movie, To the Story of Roman and Nero, Roman very wisely says in his interview, even if the government doesn't like us, we like us. It's very adorable when he says it, because he's like 9 years old saying this. And I guess the struggle makes us find ourselves, right? If it was that easy, maybe it wouldn't mean as much, but it shouldn't have to be that. We should just take it for granted that we're free and we're happy, and everywhere we go, we should be accepted and served and treated with respect. And that goes for, you know, all the different ethnicities and races in this country and every color in between. That's why I invite people to go to VidaLocaSkinLife.com. I created a skin line because, you know, I always loved lotions and potions. And in fact, you know, when I was a kid, I'd sneak into my mom's room and she had this like little table with her little creams and perfumes and all that. And I'd be sniffing and all that. So I've always been fascinated with scents and all this. And this cream is 100% natural. There's no parabens or preservatives and all that. And there's a cream and there's also a skin oil, you know, that one can put on and gives you kind of a glow. Our mission is skin has no gender. And we boldly say he, she, they, them, us on the label.
Wow, that is so cool. I love that because there are so many gendered products and oh, it's awful. We'll definitely include a tag for that as well in our show notes. So anybody listening, if you're interested, definitely check out the show notes. You'll see a link to VidaLoca Skin Life. So again,
yes,
thank you so much, Desmond Child, for coming on. And really quick, we have about a minute and a half left. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Just my song, Living on a Prayer, that I co-wrote with Jon Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora, is a song about hope. And that's why it's stood the test of time. You can go anywhere to any bar or strip joint or restaurant and, you know, karaoke. There's always somebody that's going to be singing Living on a Prayer. And I'm just so proud of that. When you go to a Bon Jovi concert, and I've gone to many in stadiums, they wait till the very last song of the entire show after the last encore. And that's when they put up all the lights. And then you can see people of all ages, even little kids, you know, with their earplugs, you know, sleeping on your parents' shoulders, all ages, all colors, who knows if they're left, right, in between. A song like that brings people together and opens up, you know, something in your heart.
Thank you guys so much for sticking around. That was a super great interview, wasn't it, Betty?
Oh, absolutely.
And now we have a special treat for all of you listeners that have stayed to the back end of the podcast, because our favorite social media meme god, Cameron, is here.
Hi.
Thank you for being here with so much enthusiasm on this Monday afternoon.
Yeah, that's just my natural state. It's called depression.
I would say that maybe this next segment will cure your depression, but it probably just adds to it because we are going down the Reddit rabbit hole once again. Cameron has provided us with a wonderful collection of Am I the Asshole and Off My Chest stories from Reddit. For any of you listeners that don't know these things, like I probably don't know either, Cameron, really quick, can you explain what the difference between Am I the Asshole and Off My Chest is?
So Am I the Asshole is basically people asking Reddit, of all places, Am I the Asshole? And as they tell a story, and True Off My Chest is just a place where people can say whatever they want. So I found a couple Halloween gems in there.
Oh, perfect. That is what we need because it's October. The leaves are so beautiful right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm just embracing spooky season. So let's get into it. Cameron, you said you wanted to start. You had a really good one you wanted to read.
Okay, so I have a request that you guys don't look at it, but it is, Am I the Asshole for singing a song at my gay friend's wedding and outshining them? Because, well, you'll see. Just don't read the story. Just let me read it. Hi, everyone. This account is a throwaway. Their 25 female friend, and then Mark, 25, married. His boyfriend, James, 26. I don't get why we need the ages, by the way.
Yeah, I think we went over this last week, mm-hmm. too.
It just makes it so clunky to read. The wedding was beautiful and one to remember for sure. However, something happened during the reception, and now Mark is upset with me. So I came on here to ask if I was in the wrong. Mark didn't have any bridesmaids or groomsmen, but he did have a select group of people close to him to help him with the wedding planning, which I was part of. During this stage, Mark approached me and asked me if I could sing a song at the reception. I have been singing since I was little, so I was honored to be asked at my close friend's wedding. I told Mark that I gladly would. Well, the wedding day arrives. The reception gets going soon. After the speeches, I was called up to the front to sing, which in my opinion went pretty well. However, during the dance floor portion of the night, Mark came up to me and it was clear that he was upset about something. It'll be funny once you know the context. I asked what was wrong and he claimed that my singing took away attention from him and James on their big day. I was shocked. I told Mark that he was the one who asked me to sing at the reception, so I don't know why he was getting so worked up. And I thought that he and James would have loved it. He stormed off and refused to speak to me for the rest of the night. The past few weeks, I have been messaging James to no response. I don't know if he's reacting this way to just stress, or if something happened between him and James that he's taking out on me, or if it really is just that my performance outshone him because Mark thought it was too good or whatever. Am I the asshole?
Absolutely not.
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. Like, I could understand getting mad if they took away the attention by singing in that way where, like, you know how, like, they have someone sing the anthem?
Oh, like the Happy Birthday, Mr. Kennedy?
The people who do that, and they gotta add their, like, you know, and the land of the free, you know, all the extra, like, vibrato.
Wait, can you do that again, Benny? I didn't hear it well enough. Is there more to this story, Cameron?
There is some more. So, as you guys can see right below the link I put there, I put song lyrics to the song she sang. If anyone would like to do the honors of saying these lyrics out loud, be my guest.
I'll read them out loud. Okay, so the song is Good Lookin' by Dixon Dallas. There's something about the way you look in my eyes. Like a starry night, you light up my sky. You lean in closer and my heart starts to pound. I heard you sigh. You know I love that sound. He's bouncing off my booty cheeks. I love the way he rides. I can hardly breathe when he's pumping deep inside. I kiss him on his neck and then he kisses on my bussy. Oh, daddy, well, I holler. Man, that boy is so damn good looking.
Oh my God.
You get the idea.
Yep, that is a song. I've heard that song all over TikTok too. You think this is real? Did someone actually sing Bouncing Off My Booty Cheeks
at a gay wedding?
Oh, that's iconic. I would not be mad about that.
I don't know. I would be kind of mad if somebody like sung a lesbian version of that at my wedding. Because like it starts off so sweet and wholesome and I'm like, okay, there's no issue here. And then it turns into that and it's just like, okay, that's way too much of a shift. Like,
to any listeners who are interested, I definitely recommend it. It's been stuck in my head for like the past 24 hours.
I mean, maybe they just don't like country music and that's why they were upset.
Yeah, it's a country song, by the way. So he goes, yeah. Bossy.
Benny, have you not heard this song? I feel like it's really popular. We need more country songs about Bussy, honestly. Yes, that was crazy.
So is she the asshole?
I say no.
Well, it depends. Like, if they had joked a lot, like, if this was, like, their song as a friend group, right? And it was meant to be, like, a reference to some in-joke that they have, you know, where they would listen to this song all the time just to laugh. Like, that's a little bit more understandable. But if this came out of nowhere, like, just stick with the classics. Like, don't start with the bussy. Back it up. Back the bussy up.
I think they would love that. What do you think, Cameron?
Personally, if someone sang that at my wedding, I would be dying laughing. So, but it's not my wedding. It's not my wedding.
I'd need warning. Yeah. I'd need to give it a stamp of approval because that would take me so off guard.
I think just seeing the family react to it would make it all worth it. I wouldn't care if you told me or not.
I guess if you do have like a conservative family member or something where you're like, oh, it took to get my grandpa to come to this wedding.
Yeah.
And then, although maybe your grandparents wouldn't even know what it's about. It would probably go over their heads.
Not at all. I'm sure that they, I mean.
Your grandparents know about bussy?
I hope not.
I'm sure they know what bouncing off booty cheeks refers to. I don't know.
I believe that's about pirate's booty.
Benny, do you want to grab a story? Enthrall us with your reading.
Sure. Let's see.
Oh, you should. Can you start it like they would start Catholic Mass? Be like, a reading from Book of Am I the Asshole?
Oh, man.
We're all Catholicly traumatized, right?
Yes.
More Christian. Chapter 12, verse 78. I give out terrible candy at Halloween. Every year I curate a special blend of the worst candy I can think of to give out at Halloween. Spearmint flavor, starlight mints, I'm giving up on the trying, butterscotch hard candy, cinnamon hard candy, double bubble gum, and my personal least favorite, plain black licorice. You monster! The thought of kids filling their buckets with this awful candy is fucking hilarious to me. Maybe it's slightly evil, but I look forward to it every year. Here's the bowl of disappointment. Monster!
Love this person.
No.
I think that is funny. Have you ever had the person that gives out, like, pretzels?
Yep.
You
know what I mean? And, like, granola bars?
I can hate the pretzel people.
I haven't had that. I was pretty lucky growing up, but I also, like, my friends and everybody, we would plan it out to go to, the, like, the richer areas. The wealthy, like, suburbanites.
Even in the wealthy areas, they're like, oh, here's a granola bar, and here's an apple.
Huh. Well, where I was, they were all too busy, like, competing with each other to be the best neighbor. And so they would just be giving, like, king-sized after king-sized after king-sized. And so...
What neighborhood was this?
In the Spokane Valley. That's where it's at.
Oh, interesting. Well, I'm from the north side, and I tried to sneak into a gated community one Halloween, but I couldn't get in. Went back to my neighborhood. But we had, my house was like the iconic Halloween house because my dad works in like entertainment industry. He has all kinds of like speakers and fog machines, and he would put everything, all our Halloween decorations up on Halloween during the day while like me and my sister were in school, and we'd come home and our house was just a total haunted house. And he had a microphone, and he would like hide in the living room and like peek out the windows and talk into this microphone, and it had a monster voice that would come out. And so like any neighborhood kid he recognized, he would like say their name and they'd be like, oh my God, the monster.
That's cute.
It was actually kind of scary. It terrified my sister for like several years. She wouldn't go trick-or-treating out our front door. I had to like take her out the back door and cut through yards to like get out in our neighborhood.
Wow.
But yeah, we cool house. We weren't the pretzel house. That house
sucked. The thing is that so far in my adult life, I have not once had a child come to my door for Halloween candy.
Oh my God. In 2020, I lived in an apartment on the second floor of an apartment with like this massive balcony. Not massive. It was like a balcony with like this massive window looking down. My girlfriend and I, we just sat there getting like drunk and high. And we were just like throwing candy at people. We were like, stay safe because of COVID, but here's candy.
That's so cute.
That's awesome. Yeah. If kids actually dared to go down into like my dead end alleyway road that leads to my house all the way in the back, then I'd be giving out king size candy bars.
You got to do like a really scary house, then reward them, you know?
The problem is that like you can't see my house unless you're at the dead end. Like you can't see anything about my house other than my car. And so kids like don't even know that I'm back there hoping upon all hopes that I get to fulfill my dream of handing out king-size candy bars.
I always buy good candy, so if anyone can find where I live.
What I really, really wanted to do for years with trick-or-treating is I wanted to get together with a group of people and dress up like Christmas carolers. And instead of like going trick-or-treat, they open the door and you just start singing Christmas carols. People would be so mad.
I don't think I would be.
You don't think so?
I would just be confused.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I tried it a couple times when I was a kid. We weren't dressed up as carolers. We were dressed up as monsters and whatever. But I managed to convince, like, my friends to try, like, singing some Christmas carols. And a lot of the parents just were like, they would answer the door and they were just like, oh, come on. Have some humor. I guess they just don't want to be reminded how close Christmas is.
That's the scariest thing I think about Halloween. That the Christmas decorations are, like, up at midnight.
They started selling them, like, August 1st.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's... I don't like that. It's summer. Let me have summer.
Don't even want to think about it.
I've got one pulled up. Am I the asshole for showing the movie Coraline to my sister kids? I am 21. I will keep it short. I was babysitting my sister's kids, 10 and 13. Since it was Halloween season, I put movie Coraline, since it is PG and kind of creepy. The kids were fine after watching it. I dropped them off, and I have been getting call after call from my sister for showing the horrifying movie. We got in an argument, and she thinks I'm a huge jerk. I apologize and was a jerk for showing it to them.
No.
That's it. I don't think that is an asshole thing to do. But, I mean, the sister should probably have a conversation if she's got, like, limits on what her teenage and preteen kid can watch. They just seem really sheltered.
Yeah, let's say that.
What do you think, Benny? What were you thinking?
Well, I mean, I had to sneak a viewing of Nightmare Before Christmas when I was a kid. I wasn't allowed to watch it. And so then I was at like a distant cousin's house with no supervision, and they had a copy on VHS. And so I spent my entire visit with them playing it on repeat so I could like absorb every single ounce of the movie before my parents would like find out.
Both of you, what was your like go-to Halloween movie when you were a kid?
Halloween Town.
talking before 13. Yeah, Halloween Town.
I didn't have a Halloween movie.
You're Christian.
Yeah, I wasn't, for a time, I wasn't even allowed Harry Potter, so.
Oh, I've never seen Harry Potter. That's not for, like, the reasons of religion.
You don't like J.K. Rowling?
Well, I definitely don't like her anymore. I mean, but watching Coraline, totally fine. Like, don't deprive your kids of that.
It is freaky, though. Like, do you think she actually made it out of the thing?
Who knows?
I've been seeing all these theories on TikTok about how she didn't actually make it out.
Yeah, lots of Reddit forums dedicated to that exact discussion.
I think Neil Gaiman himself spoke about this on Tumblr. He said, like, no, you're just reading too much into it. So I think Neil Gaiman maybe has confirmed that she's safe, she's fine. But yeah, don't deprive your kids of that. Also, like, even though I was banned from watching stuff like that as a kid, I still got to read Brothers Grimm fairy tales as a kid, and that's way more fucked up.
Those are really creepy. Those scared me when I was little. We had like a storybook from the library.
I was obsessed as a kid. I was like, this is closest I'm going to get to any of the things that have been banned.
Well, speaking of things that your parents probably wouldn't want you to read, I just sent a link to another song by Dallas Dixon. I'd love it if you could click on it and read the lyrics to us.
All right. So it's F-150. I have no idea what this song is. I see you staring at me in the corner of the bar where we've been partying in. You've got a twinkle in your eyes. I've got something on my mind that I bet will make you more than a friend. Well, when we get to sipping whiskey and we get a little frisky, I climb up on him, ride him like an F-150. Got me hooting and hollering. I'm begging for him for more. Nothing but my boots on, baby. Let's get down on the floor. You know what? This guy is doing the Lord's work, making country gay.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, and not only that, like, including F-150, let's turn those giant trucks into a gay thing. That's ours now.
I love it. I want to make a gay country playlist and link it for our listeners at home. Well, thank you so much, speaking of our listeners at home, for tuning in for this crazy country Halloween mashup of Am I the Asshole with Cameron. And of course, thank you to Cameron for providing us with all of these gems from the Reddit underground. Thank you again. And thank you to our guests this week. And everybody else, have a great week. Check us out next week. Follow us on Instagram. Give your dog some love. Oh, today's my dog's birthday. So shout out to Peter as well.
Happy birthday, Peter.
Happy birthday.
Radio SGN is hosted by Benny Loy and Lindsay Anderson and edited by Daniel Lindsley. The music for the show is provided by TRG Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on sgn.org. This podcast is part of the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network.